President Trump met with China's leader, Xi Jinping, today, and afterwards seemed very happy.
Overall, I guess on the scale of from 0 to 10, with 10 being the best, I would say the meeting was a 12.
The president spoke to reporters aboard Air Force One about his first meeting with Xi since 2019. Trump said as a result of the talks, he was going to cut some tariffs on Chinese products, though most of his tariffs from the trade war will stay in place. He also said the two sides are scheduling visits to each other's countries next year.
NPR's Anthony Kuhn joins us from South Korea. So, Anthony, tell us about the trade details.
Okay. Well, basically what Trump and Xi did was to confirm what economic officials from the U.S. and China had already ironed out last weekend in Malaysia. And Xi Jinping said to Trump that that ironing out was basically a precondition for their meeting. The key details are that, first of all, China will defer export controls on rare earths. China will resume buying U.S. soybeans. And China will do more to curb exports of the ingredients for the drug fentanyl. So President Trump responded by saying that the U.S. will lower the 20% tariffs that are on China because of the fentanyl issue down to 10%, and both countries will suspend collecting port fees on each other's ships.
Okay, now China and the U.S. met in South Korea. Why did they meet there?
Well, they met on the sidelines of the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation Summit here in Gyeongju, South Korea. And President Trump said the main point of his coming to South Korea was to speak to Xi Jinping, not come to this APEC meeting. So both of them were guests of South Korea, and that setting was not right for a big deal or an announcement. Trump said also that he did not have time to meet with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un on this trip, but he'd return for that another time.
Now, President Trump seemed to be saying that he made a deal with Xi. I mean, is it a real deal?
Well, what the Chinese state news agency Xinhua said is that Xi Jinping called it a consensus on solutions to problems. In other words, this is not a broad framework deal. It is a temporary fix for specific issues. Trump said a deal could be signed pretty soon. Perhaps a fuller agreement could be reached during a state visit, which he says he will visit China in April. I asked Chu Jae-woo, who's an expert on Chinese foreign policy at Kyunghee University outside Seoul, and here's his take. He said, it was difficult to reach a final agreement this time. Instead, I anticipated that the two leaders would confirm their differences and be satisfied with building a common understanding. And that's what seems to have happened. And he added that President Xi appeared to be eager to prevent trade tensions from impacting China's economy, especially its high-tech sector.
One more thing, Anthony, because an hour before the meeting, President Trump posted on social media that the U.S. would conduct testing on nuclear weapons, quote, on an equal basis with Russia and China. So how did that announcement go over?
Well, we didn't hear a response from Xi Jinping, but he can't have liked Trump's statement very much. Trump said that the U.S. will resume nuclear testing because other countries are doing it. Now, it's true that Russia and China are upgrading and expanding their nuclear arsenals, but neither of them have tested any atomic bombs since the 1990s. And for decades, China maintained a minimum nuclear deterrent, but it apparently decided that the U.S. was trying to cancel out that deterrent so that it could hit China with nuclear weapons and not be hit back. So Trump's announcement may confirm those fears, and if Trump was trying to pressure China into arms control talks, it may have had the opposite result and just sped up an arms race.
That's NPR's Anthony Kuhn speaking to us from South Korea. Thanks.
You're welcome.
More than 65,000 infants, toddlers, and preschoolers may soon be at risk of losing access to Head Start.
That's the federal program that provides childcare and early learning for low-income families. And because of the government shutdown, a wave of local Head Start centers across the U.S. could be forced to close beginning November 1st.
For more, we're joined by NPR's Corey Turner. Good morning, Corey.
Good morning, Layla.
So 65,000 children, I mean, help us understand why this is happening.
Yeah, so local Head Start programs all over the country run on different federal funding cycles. And the National Head Start Association says 134 of these programs are supposed to be getting their next round of federal funding November 1st. They can't do that if the government is still shut down. And so without those federal dollars, these centers are now rushing to find alternative funding. Here's Tommy Sheridan of the National Head Start Association.
They are scrambling and trying to figure out how long they can keep the doors open. There is a ton of hard work, a ton of goodwill, a ton of dedication, but hard work, goodwill, and dedication don't keep your doors open.
For now, Layla, these unfunded programs serve nearly 1 in 10 children in Head Start. And if they have to close, many working families may have to choose between taking care of their kids and going to work.
Is there anything these communities can do short of waiting for the shutdown to end?
I mean, for many programs, the answer is a pretty clear no. They are going to have to close after Friday. Some may be able to stay open at least a little longer. A year ago, I spent some time in Michigan's remote Upper Peninsula, where Corey Holcomb runs a Head Start program, and it turns out it is one of these places that is going to run out of money in early November. Holcomb told me her agency and board of directors have found a way to keep the doors open 2 more weeks. Here's how.
Making use of some reserve funds, pulling in other resources with the hopes that we will be reimbursed. And we've asked for deferments on rent payments and some utility bills during that time to still provide services.
And I should say, Layla, by services, Holcomb doesn't just mean childcare. Head Start provides high-quality early learning backed by research, plus free health screening, care for kids with disabilities, not to mention multiple nutritious meals every day, which is extra important right now with federal food benefits for low-income families also set to expire at the exact same time.
Wow. So, Corey, do we know where these closures might hit hardest?
Yeah, according to a map put together by the National Head Start Association, programs will be at risk in more than 40 states, but the places hit hardest first will likely be Florida, Georgia, Missouri, and Ohio. Keep in mind, though, Head Start serves about 750,000 children, and if this shutdown keeps going, more and more of those centers are gonna run out of money. It's also worth stepping back here for a quick second, Layla, because Head Start celebrated its 60th anniversary this year. And while it still enjoys strong bipartisan support, the Trump administration actually considered trying to cut the program from its budget proposal. And in the spring, they temporarily withheld funding from Head Start. So this shutdown is just the latest crisis in what's been a pretty tough year for Head Start and the families who depend on it.
NPR education correspondent Corey Turner. Thank you, Corey.
You're welcome.
President Trump's pick to be Surgeon General was scheduled to appear in front of a Senate committee later this morning for her confirmation hearing. Dr. Casey Means is a wellness influencer, an entrepreneur, and author, but as we just learned, the hearing was postponed at the last minute. NPR's Will Stone joins us to tell us why and who Casey Means is. I mentioned a few things, Will, that Casey Means is, but she's got a new title, right?
Yeah, she's soon to be a mother. It turns out Casey Means, who is pregnant, just went into labor. The hearing was already scheduled to be virtual, so she did not have to travel so late in her pregnancy. She's currently in Hawaii. And the committee was set to do this, but clearly this changed the plans. And at this point, we don't know when the hearing will be rescheduled.
All right, so tell us more exactly about who she is.
Yeah, Casey Means is in her late 30s. She went to Stanford Medical School and was pretty far along in her training to be a head and neck surgeon, but she dropped out of residency before finishing. And then she pivoted to what's known as functional medicine, briefly had a practice in Oregon, but really made her name on social media and through a book she published on diet and metabolic health. I'll note that her brother is a close advisor to Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. So Casey Means and her brother did the rounds on big podcasts in the wellness space. And her message tends to echo what you hear from Kennedy and his allies in the Make America Healthy Again movement, especially when they talk about high rates of chronic illness. Here's how she talked about that at a congressional roundtable led by Republicans last year.
What we are dealing with here is so much more than a physical health crisis. This is a spiritual crisis.
And she often talks about our food supply, environmental toxins. She criticizes the reliance on the pharmaceutical industry. And Kennedy has said she will be the greatest surgeon general ever.
All right, yeah, but there's been some pushback, though.
Yeah, there has, on several fronts. Certainly a lot of opposition from folks in the medical and public health establishment who argue she doesn't have the qualifications. She doesn't have the leadership or clinical experience you'd expect from the Surgeon General, who's considered the nation's top doctor. Dr. Jerome Adams, who was Surgeon General during Trump's first term, told me confirming Means would set a, quote, disastrous precedent. And she has made statements casting doubt on the safety of the childhood vaccine schedule, also about oral contraceptives. She's endorsed raw milk, similar to Kennedy. Now, interestingly, when Trump announced he'd pick Means, you also saw some opposition emerge among some supporters of Kennedy. And part of that was some in that camp seemed to worry she wasn't critical enough of vaccines. So there were questions about whether this fracture in the MAHA base would sink her confirmation. But it's unlikely the administration would have set up this hearing if she didn't have the votes to get confirmed.
Well, Trump announced that she was his pick back in the spring, and now the confirmation is delayed. So what does it mean for the country not to have an acting Surgeon General?
Yeah, I mean, we've been months and months without a Surgeon General under this administration. And some of that delay was because Trump had first picked a Fox News contributor for the role. She dropped out. Then they went to Casey Means. As for the job itself, you know, Surgeon General is not about making big policy decisions. The person is really a communicator in chief for the nation's health. They take up causes, they issue reports. You can remember Biden's Surgeon General did a lot on loneliness and social media. So that's not happening, obviously, since she's not confirmed. But I will point out, as Secretary Kennedy himself has certainly taken up a lot of the communication work, as we've seen, and he uses his platform to promote his views on health.
That's NPR's Will Stone. Will, thanks.
Thank you.